Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, JB here. Now, before we start, I'm giving a quick shout out. That is to Trevor Baker, who is involved with a game this weekend, Friday, 12th of April, at Saracen Stone X Stadium. And I hear you ask, JB, what is this game in aid of? Well, it is in aid of bowel cancer. It is the paypal.me/bowelfund if you want to go and contribute or help out. And the match is between, this is two very cool teams, the Met Police Specialist Firearms Command versus London Ambulance Service. So to everyone playing in that, go well. And yeah, show up, show your support. Now on with the pod.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Back in the rugby dungeon after the round of 16 in the Champions Cup and a load of other club rugby at all levels, which we are will be the only podcast flying the flag for those, just as we are the only podcast that's there for you 52 weeks of the year, every single Monday morning, without fail. And if you appreciate that, you can hit subscribe wherever you get your podcast to show your appreciation. You can get in touch, contacteggchasers@gmail.com, and get more contact at patreon.com/eggchasers. We just were setting the levels of the microphones and did an introduction, which we will definitely not be broadcasting on this feed.
No.
But may make an appearance on the Patreon podcast.
Yeah, I think we should. Yeah. I absolutely think that we should.
Definitely.
Yeah, I do. Oh, I'm looking at Phil. Phil?
I'm okay with that going on Patreon pod. I'd be
not Phil that did anything wrong. It's our friend Steve.
Maybe I was slightly derogatory certain individuals.
Sometimes the truth is just the truth, isn't it? Isn't derogatory.
It is. True.
Right. True. How are you doing, JB?
I'm very well, thank you.
You look very comfortable there, mate. I love this new
setup. This new setup is so good. It was the conclusion of all the leagues weekend, wasn't it? All the leagues have finished.
Yeah.
So I think it's only right, actually, after we do our little introductions, that we go straight into that and talk about the winners. Not maybe not the losers, but the winners.
Yeah. Obviously, we will be covering the Champions Cup. I didn't watch any of the Challenge Cup. 8 games is quite enough for me.
No, I didn't. I forgot it was on, to be honest.
I've not even seen the Ulster's highlights other than the Paul Valemza red card.
And did Sale win?
No. Lost away to Ospreys.
Goodness me, I think the wheels are off there.
Oh my God, they were in truly off. Free fall until last week where they battered Exeter, but they'd lost 3-4 on the bounce up to that point.
That is really poor.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, the breaking reaction there, live reaction. Sale game.
We can't really say much more than that because we know nothing else about it.
Phil came in a nice new bit of swag today. What like Japanese rugby team is that? And it was Sale Harriers. You're properly all in on the running, aren't you?
I wouldn't say all in on the running. I'm trying to do more. I'm enjoying it at the moment. My ankle is 98% of what it should be, which is good. But I do like the Sale Harriers stash. And the opportunity came up a few weeks ago to get one of their lovely track tops. Vivid green with red and white and black and the cool Sale logo.
Right, does this annoy you somewhat? It annoys me. Do you know when a town has numerous sports teams, but they all play in different colours?
Like Sale?
Yeah, exactly. Well, so Sale is blue, right? But Sale Harriers is green and black.
Leicester City and Leicester Tigers.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's a good
point. It drives me insane. I'd have thought that most clubs in most cities that don the name would get their club colours from the city crest or something. But it's just not a thing. Because the Manchester City crest actually does not represent, I don't think it does anyway, Manchester United or Man City. Now that could be because, of course, they grew up with their own histories and that's where they are.
Oh, yeah, because, hold on,
Man City, what's that one? Because Man United's got the boat and the devil.
It does. The boat and the devil. So the boat...
Well, that'd be the shipping canals.
The ship canal. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Which, presumably, there's something about that in the Manchester logo. I don't actually know.
Manchester, well, the Manchester logo, crest, of course, is the B, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but not really.
Oh, why?
It's like... Because Manchester Rugby Club, which is one of my former clubs, that had the actual Manchester... emblem in some capacity, like some sort of lion type thing.
And I mean, that's bang out of order because they're in Stockport.
Well, they are. But yeah, one of the oldest rugby clubs in the land.
In Stockport.
Anyway.
Yeah, so it just annoys me that loads of... If you've got the name of a town or a city, you should adopt the colours of whatever the town or city's crest is.
Should standardise it in some way.
So I'm looking at a... City of Manchester crest, not Manchester City crest. And it does have...
It's like a unicorn, isn't it?
Boat, yeah, unicorn and the lion with a boat and with worker bees and a globe at the top. So it looks something
like
that.
Yellow and red.
So actually, Manchester Rugby Club's badge is very much
very
like that.
Similar. Yeah.
So actually, Manchester United do all right out of that.
I'm just thinking like Northampton Town and Northampton Saints. Northampton Town playing like maroon. I think
I don't know. I think not tell you.
I think hang on though. In fairness to Northampton, their away kit is often maroon, isn't it? Their second kit.
Is it?
Yeah, they've had loads of maroon kits.
Okay. I wonder if that's a nod.
Yeah, their second kit is...
Well, maybe it is more of a way of just distinguishing the two, because I imagine there was historically a bit of rivalry over players, fans.
Maybe.
Like historically, presumably they both play at the same time, like
Salford City Reds and Manchester United are identical copies of each other kit-wise.
Red Devils.
Both called the Red Devils.
Yeah. Mm. So I reckon in a lot of places, like I've just looked up Exeter, and Exeter City Football Club are
red and white.
Red and white stripes. Yeah.
Are they?
Red and white stripes. The university's green and white hoops and Exeter Chiefs.
So yeah, I think there's more chance of Wigan. Wigan be a classic. Like Wigan is known as the red and white hoops, right? But Wigan
football is blue and white stripes.
What on earth?
You can't get more.
You'd think
opposite.
For Civic Pride, you'd have more crossover fans if you played in the same kit.
Yeah, I bet it's to do with the historic rivalries.
Yeah, possibly.
Bath United, black and white stripes, more like a Newcastle kit. Well, Newcastle have had the black
Newcastle
and white, black
when
and
they
white,
went yeah. when they went to the Premiership and they became professional. It was Sir John Hall who owned Newcastle Football Club who bought them. So I think he standardised the two.
He might have also owned the ice hockey team.
Maybe. Really? Who knows? Hey, I'll tell you what, I've got a challenge to lay down. contact@gmail.com. You see, I'm not bothered about seeing, meeting celebrities or anything like that. I could honestly couldn't care less.
This is true. Mm-hmm. This is actually true.
Don't care. What I really like, though, is when you see celebrities in unusual places or doing unusual things. So that's the challenge I want to lay down. contact@gmail.com. A celebrity in an unusual or totally unexpected place. And I'm going to kick off with, I'm going to set the bar. Set the bar quite high. I was at Salford Quays at the weekend, and I walked past Warwick Davis.
Okay, yeah. He's quite recognisable, isn't he?
From Life's Too Short, what was that?
The Ricky Gervais.
Ricky Gervais thing. What was that film he was extras. In back in the day? I mean, he was.
Oh,
Snow White.
The fantasy thing where he was wanted to be a magician, and then the Daikini babies and Willow.
Willow.
No, he was in Willow. Yeah. Anyway, Warwick Davis went past me on a miniature Segway.
Oh, that's awesome.
Really?
That is awesome.
He zoomed past me on a miniature Segway. And so there you go. That's the bar. Celebrities in unusual, in unexpected, seeing them in unexpected places and doing unexpected
very
things.
Very much the same as you, but when it comes to rugby players, like, I'm not really bothered by any rugby player. Because I've spoke to a lot and so on and so forth. What I am bothered about, though, are rugby players from a certain era. So I'll give you an example. So in Wasps, it's like, would you like to meet Will Rowlands? No. Would you like to meet such and such? No.
And Mark Van Gisbergen?
Yeah, exactly. If I saw Mark Van Gisbergen, I'd be going, oh my God, that's him. The guy I saw, Sean Perry, I was like, can someone bring Sean Perry? Bring Sean Perry over. Like, why? What, Bristol scrum half, vice captain on his first England cap? Get me Sean Perry, ex-welder, bring me him. So that was really exciting. Yeah, I like players from Vaughan Going. I'd go wild to meet Vaughan Going. Jason Robinson, not so much.
all right, old school rugby players as well, that whose names haven't been uttered, but you've seen.
Yeah, so Graham Bond, I'd love to know what Graham Bond's up to.
Because when was the last person time anyone mentioned Vaughan Going?
Well, quite.
Vaughan Going hasn't been mentioned on...
For too long.
He hasn't been mentioned for too long. He's been mentioned now. So if you see an old school niche rugby player...
Yeah, it's got to be niche.
It's got to be properly niche.
Anyone who was involved in 2003 World Cup winning team.
No one.
Is it.
They're all boring. They're all so boring.
Yeah. Trying to think of an example now. This is the point. It's really hard to think of an
example.
I'll
give you one which is a bit more modern, but definitely a sort of niche one because he sort of declined so much afterwards. Joe van Niekerk.
Nice.
Yes. I've not seen anything on Joe van Niekerk for a little while.
He left Toulon for 2 years and became, well, let's just say very un-rugby player-ish.
Yes, he did not look good. He was a hell of a player for a few years.
Wasn't he just?
Yeah. Hope he's doing okay.
So there we go. Celebrities in unusual situations and niche rugby players. Adam Balding.
Oh, superb.
I don't know why that came to mind. Anyway, there we go.
Adam Balding, was he Leicester or Gloucester?
Leicester Tigers and then Gloucester.
Yeah, anyway.
Contact edchasers@gmail.com. Right, go on then, JB. Take us away with the winners.
Yeah.
Let's celebrate some winners.
Yeah, so awesome weekend of rugby because, of course, it's the culmination of a year's worth of hard work for so many teams. So we will go, where should we start? What did we say in the kitchen? It was Chinner that won National 1.
Chinner won National 1.
Led by Nick Easter. National 2 is Leeds Tykes.
Well, that's North. There's North and South, yeah.
South was, I think, I want to say Isha.
Yes, it was.
West, a club that I've actually played for. Dings Crusaders.
Dings Crusaders, mate.
Yeah,
no way.
It's quite nice to hear. I mean, obviously, I've not seen anything of Dings Crusaders since I was in Bristol all that time ago. But they seem to be, when I was in Bristol, at least, second fiddle to Clifton.
Clifton were always the big dogs outside of Bristol.
Is that right?
Yeah, well, they were always the highest performing team. They were like National 2, National 1 a little bit, down National 3 North, National 3 South.
Macclesfield have gone back up.
I'm just looking at that National 2 West. God, that covers a big old patch.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
So from Redruth up to, across to Loughborough.
Yeah.
Which is like East Midlands. And up to as far as the highest one up in the country I can see is Chester.
Wow.
Chester in that league.
Redruth.
Chester.
Chester.
That's a horrible
that is
league
a
to be in.
Mental league.
Where did Chester finish?
Ninth. Ninth out of 14.
Okay.
There are some brutal drills. That's almost national.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is.
Because the southeast one is basically London and around London. Like a small patch around London. The north, well, if Chester's not in the north, like it's everything north of Chester, which is pretty northern.
Well, you do get these weird things. So like Northwich, for instance, often go into Midlands leagues and they come back into the...
Yeah.
And Rochdale, for some unknown reason, always get caught out to be in the northeast.
Well, Rochdale are in the same league as Glossop, where I was about 3 weeks ago, who are both playing in the northeast, which is brutal travel for them.
And when you compare that to National 2 North, even though that like North is like it should be a huge patch, you actually look at it and it's, yeah, there's a couple of journeys, but there's so many great like derby games there.
Yeah.
So you've got Tynedale right up in the northeast. Hull's a bit of a trek, but
there's two Hull teams. But yeah.
Everything else you can throw a,
like, Yorkshire.
I don't know, a 50 mile radius around it.
Yeah.
That East League is brutal.
That is brutal.
I guess you get the East, and there's a big concentration in Bath and Bristol.
Sorry, I mean the West League.
Sorry, West, yeah.
I mean,
and then it's very sparsely populated as you go into Devon and Cornwall.
Yeah.
Which will probably account for that. So Rosendale was second with
Macclesfield,
Baron McGuigan and co. But Macclesfield won the league.
Did Blackburn finish third or fourth?
Third or fourth, yeah.
Yeah.
There was, trying to think, Birkenhead and Waterloo went up from Broughton Parks League. I'm missing a league there somewhere. In Manchester's league, it escapes me. Someone went up from that league, fine. Widnes, fair play, Widnes have gone up from Tok H's league. Now, that's, I think that's genuinely amazing, because I have played and battled against these boys for about 5 years. I've kept a consistent team. They have been gradually getting older, but that team, or the majority of it that went up this season, were together 5 years ago. They've won at least two leagues where no promotion was available to them. They didn't manage to do it.
That's always tough.
Last year, all the year before, so then we won it with no promotion. Then they came second and have stuck together, and they've finally gone up this year. I think that's a absolutely remarkable achievement.
That is good. My favourite league is in Level 8, Counties 2, Hearts and Middlesex. Check this out for a top four.
Go on.
Brunel University won the league, and they needed to win the final game in order to win the league, and they managed to win by 3 points in a 73-point thriller. They won 38-35. Brunel University won in first position. Ealing Trailfinders 18-71, so it's obviously the amateur arm of Ealing. Yeah. Third position, Wasps FC. Fourth position, Saracens Amateurs.
Nice.
That's a wicked league.
That's cool. Well,
it's basically the insurance league, isn't it? That's the future of probably all three of those clubs.
Well, if Saracens keep losing £5 million a year.
Yep, it'll be Saracens Amateurs forever.
Yeah.
So, North Dorset have gone up.
Have they?
So North Dorset got promoted this weekend, which means I think they are in the same league as Aylesbury next year.
Ooh.
There's one team at level 7. You've got your computer open, Phil. Where do Mavericks Rugby Club play? Because Mavericks is a strange name for a rugby club.
It's tasty, isn't it?
Brentwood.
They're in Counties 1, Essex.
Yeah, Brentwood, according to this.
Brentwood, okay.
Mavericks. Wally, outskirts of Brentwood.
Wonder what the history of that is. Anyway.
Which is
ex-F-14 fighter pilots.
Yeah, I was going to say, is there an American army base nearby?
Probably.
Maybe.
Anyway. Right, so that's a bit of grassroots rugby, and it's all wrapped up now. All the games have all been wrapped up.
Well, for the most part. Yes, for the...
leagues.
For the leagues.
Yeah, obviously there's the Papa John's Cup.
Papa John's Cup now, which is going to be quite good.
Yeah.
I would say.
You can play in it?
Maybe not this week, but maybe next week. Maybe the week after next.
If you're still in it.
If we're still in it by then, yeah, which hopefully we will be. Hang on, there's one more winner. I was trying to remember who they are. Oh, no, we did it. It was Maxfield. It's fine.
Cool.
Joe Van Niekerk.
Mm-hmm.
There is an article from April the 1st, 2024. So 6 days ago.
What?
In South Africa Rugby Magazine. Saying that Joe Van Niekerk struggled with his identity after finishing playing rugby in 2014.
Yes, I think some of the pictures were evidence.
Yeah, they would attest to that. He spent the last 7 years living in Costa Rica.
Wow!
Farming in Costa Rica. And he's now, his partner is pregnant and they are travelling back, or have travelled back, and are now living back in South Africa.
Awesome. Well, hello to Joe Van Niekerk, because and presumably he's a massive listener to the pod.
I assume so. I have to say, he looks well. He looks like he's in a good place.
Imagine finding himself in Costa Rica. Yeah. That's incredible. Yeah. One of the most biodiverse countries in the world, apparently.
He does look well. He does. He looks very well. So, 43 years old. Fair play to him. So, a bit of good news.
So, Champions Cup.
Ace. Where to start?
Yeah, I'm just going to park the general conversation, which we've already had many times. We've said there's no silver bullet with the format, but the fact that it was, as Phil pointed out so long ago, you're statistically more likely to have the team that finished top seed being in the same pool as the team that finished 16th seed. And as it happened, we had five repeat fixtures and two fixtures with teams from the same league. So seven out of the eight fixtures didn't feel as special as maybe it could have been.
But there was a bit more history. There was a bit more because you've got the grudges to settle.
Some of it was grudges to settle, but some of it just felt kind of historic and traditional. In the case of
Northampton,
Munster, definitely. Yep. Absolutely that. It's interesting. It doesn't feel like the Champions Cup has translated to South Africa yet. Yeah. They don't have 25, 30 years of growing up watching it. And it being part of the fabric of the rugby there.
No, but I tell you what, I think they do enjoy ruining the party That's what I would say about them. So I think I don't really care who wins the Rabo Pro Direct URC. Right? I just don't care. I think many people who actually watch the URC simply do not care. I think South Africans really care about that competition because in their first year they won it.
Yeah.
And I think if they win the European Cup, they'll massively care. Well,
so there were 26,000 people, 24, 25, 26, around that figure in Cape Town at the Stormers game.
Stormers.
There was not many at the Pretoria game. What's amazing is the reason I've kind of found out why. Mm. It's partly that the history of the Champions Cup isn't really there yet, but actually it's the time of the kickoff clashed with AFI's, the big school game in Pretoria.
Really?
So there were more people at the schools match than the Bulls match.
Wow.
Which is unreal, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it says rugby's in a very healthy place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not going to watch, I mean, in fact, incredibly healthy. If you've substituted watching the Bulls for watching the local kids, I mean, more power to you.
Yeah, they've got to be some pretty good kids.
Well, yeah, they are.
It's a pretty dedicated, knowledgeable fans.
I'm going to spend a day with AFI's. I've got in touch with the head coach
amazing.
When I'm in Pretoria. And I'm going to try and get to. It's on the same day as Ireland v South Africa second test, but hopefully it's early enough in the day that I can catch it. But AFI's against Maritzburg, which is meant to be like one of the big matches. 20,000 people will be turning up to watch this game.
Do you know, when I was in South Africa for a friend's wedding, Everyone knows that I do rugby because it's friends' wedding and whatnot, and people were talking to me about rugby. And a lot of people over there were telling me, oh, my friend does this for this university or that for that university. And I paid basically no attention because it means nothing to me, university rugby. But that stacks up now because it is actually quite a big deal. If you're a head coach of, like, Cape Town University or, I don't know, making it
Stellenbosch.
Stellenbosch or whatever it is, that's actually a big deal.
Yeah.
It's a really big deal.
Yeah.
Wasn't it Proudfoot, he's gone to, it's either Currie Cup or one of the university teams after coaching, well, South Africa to a World Cup
and then England to a World Cup final.
World Cup.
Oh,
yeah, South Africa to win a World Cup and then England to a semi final.
Mm.
Yeah, so it's crazy.
So I think I'm going to start off with the negative.
Yeah, go on.
He's slamming someone.
Go on.
I was thinking about this.
We can get slamming Leon out the way. Their selection was a disgrace. They're in a bit of a top 14 tussle at the bottom, so they just didn't even send any of their big names there. So, dealt with.
Didn't even notice Leon.
Move on.
That's how little I paid attention to them.
Neither did Bulls.
No.
Do you think it is possible that Stuart Lancaster goes down as the most overrated coach in history? I was thinking about this. As Leinster won today.
To lose.
No.
Oh, Leinster.
Sorry, yesterday Leinster won, right? Without him, they might go and win the competition. Did he win a single top four, a single URC? He must have won at least one URC.
He must have.
Yeah, he won URC. There hasn't been a European title for 9 years.
So he's not won a European title with them.
No.
Okay. He got knocked out in the World Cup. Prior to that, I think he might have got Leeds relegated, or he's in a very poor Leeds team.
He also was part of the team that kept Leeds up against
the maybe
odds.
He did that too. I mean, he avoided being the worst team in the Premiership 1 year. Yes, well done. And now he's got what is basically an unlimited budget, 700,000 of which has been spent on Sia Khaleesi, which in my mind isn't exactly money well spent. And they're out of the European Cup.
The amount of money spent on Sia Khaleesi is kind of irrelevant to Stuart Lancaster. I don't think he made that signing, and
he's a really good person.
Yeah.
Khaleesi's a really good person.
The amount that's been spent is kind of irrelevant.
Well,
discussion.
Yeah, look, on the Sia Khaleesi point, it's just funny, isn't it? It's just funny that someone spent £700,000 on a flanker. I mean, that's just ludicrous. In any competitive environment in rugby, spending £700,000 on an average-sized flanker is nuts.
I think we had this exact discussion when we were waiting outraged in the queue to get into Racing 92.
Probably.
For the game against Toulouse.
It is one of my favourite discussion points, to be fair. But there again...
I think the discussion point, the point I made is, I bet you they have made more than that from sponsorship.
I'm going to take that
because Sia Khaleesi's there.
I don't think so. I simply don't think so.
I honestly reckon he could have paid for himself.
That club and the identity of that club is what attracted Sia Khaleesi to them, not vice versa. I think
Do you think?
Yeah, the institution of Racing now is just so cool.
Yeah, but Societe Generale or whatever that insurance company is, and Natixis and stuff.
They've still been there.
We've got Sia Khaleesi coming in. You get a few appearances with him. Okay, we'll pay another $100,000.
Yeah, look, it's worth something. He's definitely worth something. Yeah. It's just not much on the rugby field, in my opinion. Like, there are, I think if you looked across the competition this week alone, there'd be numerous flankers who are of his class. Maybe not good.
On the pitch today with him, I would take either of those two Toulouse flankers, Jack Willis or Francois Crowe. I'd spend $700,000 on them if I had to.
And Ramat,
I wouldn't spend $700,000 on any flanker.
No.
Maybe Peter Stefsatoy.
Yeah, I think I'd probably spend...
Or Ardie Surveyor.
Yeah.
But But no one else. Because they're just not worth that much. And there's
lots of them.
Yeah. There's so many of them. So, like, who's the joke on, really? Maybe it's me, because Stuart Lancaster just keeps on getting massive jobs. But
how many trophies do you think Lancaster's won at Leinster?
Two.
So what do you think they are?
Both URC.
So he has won two URC.
Yeah.
And another two URC. And one Champions Cup.
He's won a Champions Cup?
Yeah.
Has he been there that long?
Well, he went there straight after England. So he was from there from 2016.
Oh, there we go then.
So he was there when they won the last Champions Cup?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, of course he was, because he comes in.
I'll take that back mate.
He's a senior. He was a senior coach.
Yeah, because he came in midway through the season, I think, or at the start of the season. Leo Cullen. Do you remember when Leo Cullen lost loads of weight?
Yeah.
No, I mean, that's the serious thing. Yeah. Like, he was really stressed with the whole...
Yeah.
Weight of Leinster, and that's the year that they won it, and they haven't won since.
So 17-18, where they beat Racing 92 in the final. They've subsequently been to three out of the five following finals and lost all three.
First, okay, so in fairness, it took him about 12 months to leave his mark.
Only
one team can win it, and if you class every team that loses a final as a failure, then there's a lot of failures.
But this isn't my standard. I think this would be their standard. I think that's what Leinster would say. I think they would say...
No, but you're trying to make the argument that he's...
Don't
shift it now. You were making the argument, which is fine.
Don't win the European Cup with Leinster, it is a failure. If you don't win it in a three-year period, it's a failure. Five-year period, definitely a failure.
I think the URC,
yes.
That's
like being Glasgow Rangers in the Scottish Premiership.
Yeah. It kind of is, isn't it?
They won it four. Leinster won URC four times on the bounce, but they've not won it. So they lost it the first year he was there, but then they won it four times on the bounce, and then the last two they failed. And actually, they failed to make the finals in the last two, which is really disappointing.
You know, if he stumbles into a European Cup next year, because he's got the best team in France, he won't. But if he did, he'd be the next England coach. He would have failed his way back up to being an England coach.
I don't think he'll ever get to an England coach.
I'll make the counter-argument. Leinster are missing Stuart Lancaster.
Well, let's see if they win it this year.
Did you hear the Jameson Gibson Park interview with Craig Doyle after the Leicester game? So Craig Doyle basically said, what's the difference this year? Like, is there a difference? Partly referring to the game that they're playing next week, partly referring to the fact that they've already beaten La Rochelle, who they've failed to beat in the last two finals. And the one thing that Gibson Park referenced was, he said, we Leinster are tighter in defence. We're a better defensive unit this time around, which would be a direct influence of Nienaber.
Yeah.
One would assume.
Yes.
Yeah. I love the praise given to Lancaster, which is wherever he's gone, however much he's lost. As soon as he leaves, it's like, well, Chris Robshaw turned out okay. It's like, yeah, okay, but that's not at that point. Or, oh, well, England did get to a World Cup final. That was definitely Lancaster. I'm like, I'm not sure it is. If Leinster win it this year, people will start saying things like, well, that was the foundations of Lancaster. I guarantee it. That is what people will say. He has somehow got credit for a World Cup final appearance from England. And if Leinster win it this year, he'll somehow get credit for a Heineken Cup final.
I don't think you get credit for a World Cup final appearance. No one says, England got to a World Cup final because of Stuart Lancaster. But what I will say is, the job he did...
He laid the foundations.
The job he did should not be defined by England's exit in 2015. He did a lot... Well,
I think it should be defined by the exit. But some of the foundations he laid were very useful.
Yeah. It's not his fault he got given the job before he should have been given the job.
Look.
Anyway, we don't need to go over this.
Or he never should have been given the job.
I do not think.
At no point ever.
Yeah.
I do not think that Fred Goodwin's tenure at RBS should be defined by the banking collapse. He did put in some great foundations.
Okay, well, no, but the point I'm making is, considering he shouldn't have been given the job, he was a caretaker who did quite well because he cleaned house a bit. He should never have been given the job. And with that backdrop, he did very well.
He could have been the next guy.
All you need to do is go and ask Gary Ringrose, go and ask Hugo Keenan, go and ask...
I'm sure they love him.
He's a really nice guy.
He's obviously a really nice guy and a great coach. He is a good coach.
Yeah.
But he's just not cut out for the top level cut and thrust, is he? He's not Ronan O'Gara.
It's hard to be having this conversation when his team were playing against Toulouse.
But that's who they've got to beat. I agree. That's why you bring this guy in.
But can I just for reference, in terms of personnel,
mm-hmm.
at one point, the replacements for Toulouse were leaving the field, Piatto Malvaca and Emmanuel Meafu. And entering the field, Julien Marchand and Thibaut Flamont.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing, isn't it? But if you spend 700k on Sia Khaleesi, sometimes you get limited options. So, you know, no sympathy from me.
And Racing not having Le Garec as well.
Yeah. So
being robbed of having maybe the two best scrum halves in the world competing against each other.
No, in France, not in the world. JGP is way better. He's way further up the pecking order.
Yeah, so Gibson Park. Yeah, Gibson Park is better.
Yeah.
Other than that, because Aaron Smith's now retired, after Clerk's not what he was. England don't have one. Wales don't have one.
Nope.
Yep.
Scotland. Okay. Have got a couple of average ones.
So two of the best.
I think they are definitely the two best in France. They are two of the best in the world.
Yeah.
Okay, fair.
Toulouse were a cut above Racing today. Well, it wasn't even close.
Toulouse were a cut above almost anyone they play.
But I think
Toulouse were... I completely agree.
They cut loose in the end.
They did.
But Toulouse weren't amazing for big portions of the game.
Yeah, agreed.
But they still won at an absolute canter.
Yeah, but yeah, I thought it was...
Did you manage to watch the last 20 minutes of the match?
No, I did not.
Oh, I did. I watched a French feed,
which was
absolutely fine. Which does make me think, because my instant thought was, the French TV company have just totally balls up there. But their feed was absolutely fine. So I'm assuming they just cut the feed to TNT Sport, but I don't know.
Or there's someone with fat fingers in London.
I have no idea.
So I thought Ramat in the back row was really, really good, particularly in the line-out.
Crow, the whole back row was awesome.
Yeah.
Francois Crow is amazing.
Jack Willis,
that defensive
tackle.
Oh, wow.
Very nicely balanced.
Yeah.
So good.
They have so much class. They can play in, say, second gear for huge amounts of time and then all of a sudden just turn it on and score. They are a remarkable team. I think if I was going to put my money somewhere, this is the team to win it this year from what I've seen so far. It's not La Rochelle. I think La Rochelle have aged somewhat. They're just not as cutting as they were. But they do have some great tournament experience. And Leinster, we'll have to see. We'll have to see.
Leinster have got probably the toughest next game because they host La Rochelle. Bordeaux host Harlequins at home, who were another one in the conversation. Toulouse host Exeter.
I tell you what.
They're going to roll Exeter over.
That is the team. The team is Bordeaux.
I think the team is Bordeaux.
They're legit.
Yeah.
And to do it without Jalibert as well, with Garcia, who looked ace.
But what's great, like Toulouse and Bordeaux, and actually Racing to an extent, in fact, just French teams in general, they play the same shapes that English teams play. You know, they have the lead runner and the out-the-back option.
Options, inside option.
They have exactly the same shape. But the difference is, when there's just something about the way the French play rugby, when it's on and when they go, they just drop the hammer and everyone floods through. And it's just, when it's on, they know when to hit the trigger.
Well, do they remind you, well, not remind you, do Northampton remind you of a French team?
Yes, it was exactly what I was thinking today, because Northampton do not play. When you see English teams, they seem to go through the structures and the shape robotically, like, oh, this is what we do. We play one player and we have an option out the back. And
well,
Northampton play much more fluidly.
Same which I said not so long ago. and I still stand by, and I'm trying to flesh this idea out a little bit. But England are full of Owen Farrell type company men, which is great in some circumstances.
In peacetime.
Yeah, exactly right. And they're good. You know, they take their orders, they follow their instructions. If the coach says do this, they do whatever it is.
And again, just because I am going to defend Owen Farrell, if Owen Farrell was in a Toulouse team and they said go wild when it's on, Owen Farrell would do that as well.
He'd be horrified, but I don't know.
I mean, he went pretty wild on Harlequins about 2 weeks ago.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I don't know, but England players tend to listen to their coaches and they tend to be good company men, and I think that's a product of them having so many players. They get the right, in air quotes, character guys who are going to listen. Whereas if you can only pick Finn Russell, you're stuck with Finn Russell. And if he decides to play differently in the second half, he will play differently in the second half.
Interestingly,
you can do about
it. Interesting. So I spent a bit of time chatting to Jack Willis a few weeks ago in Toulouse. And he said that one of the things that he has found difficult to transition to is that the coaching in France is much more, the rugby in France is much more coach-led than player-led. When he was at Wasps, he was kind of the defensive captain and would stand up, give presentations, do the research on the team for the next weekend and go, this is how we're going to approach this. Whereas in France, it's the coaches tell you what to do and the players do it.
Yeah, because this is a very modern phenomenon and I don't actually agree with it that much. I don't know if I agree with it or not. Have you ever listened to sort of Navy SEALs and Special Forces guys talk and like talk about decentralized command and giving over ownership to, you know?
You've been listening to Jocko Willink.
Yeah, all that. But actually, it is true. You ask people who are in Special Forces in the UK, it is true. This is kind of what they want, like leadership. And they try and do that in rugby environments. And I don't think it always works. So there's always in a Premiership club, or not always, often in a Premiership club, two players that will run the defensive session, or two players that will run the analysis session, or certainly in Sale, they used to break up into groups and they would look at a certain bit of analysis as a three. So it's very interesting. The French are like, no, absolutely not. You're going to listen to this.
Coaches tell you what you're doing and you go and do it.
Yeah. But
actually they have the skill set, and what the coaches are telling them to do is play what's in front of you and react to what the person with the ball is doing.
But then they do have an awful lot of awkward characters too. I mean, just by the nature of the country, they have a lot of awkward, very awkward characters.
I think it's that reaction in the moment that makes Toulouse such a good team.
I think that is as well. And I think it's the... It's almost... The way I'd probably try and describe it would be the fear of failure is greater in... Or the fear of risk is greater in English rugby.
That's a great way of putting it.
Because the support lines, so when the French teams are really going for it and really punching holes, the supporting man isn't running a ruck clearing line, like at the low risk averse line. He's running that support line to make the break.
Yeah, you're right.
And kind of the secondary thing would be clearing the ruck. Whereas the English players are more likely to be, well, I'll run the defense, like the ruck clearing line, and if it just happens to fall right, I might get an offload, but clear the ruck would be the priority. And so there's just like a shift in the attacking, slightly more onus on the attacking priority.
And just on the player led stuff, it's freedom within constraints.
Yeah. I think probably under Lee Blackett, it might be a bit different. I can imagine Di Young to Lee Blackett was a liberation for the players. Yeah,
yeah, and actually, you know, the Lee Blackett's coaching style, I have a lot of time for Lee Blackett. Mm. I think his team's played wonderful rugby. In fact, for all of the praise that we give to Finn Russell about how Bath play at the moment, probably Lee Blackett is equally as to probably deserves equal credit.
Mm. Yeah,
yeah, agreed.
And in Northampton, and just to Phil's point, that final try they scored, the George Hendy one, and we can go through games in a bit more depth. That was just a case of Northampton had the sense of, I can see where the space is.
Just
whang the ball. Actually, it was a rubbish pass, but it was just a
dreadful pass.
A dreadful pass, but just whang it to where the space is.
I want to know what's going on really at Northampton. There's obviously some questions that need to be answered. And I think we need to start with their strength and conditioning team. We want everyone to be 5 kilograms heavier, but also much fitter. How does that work? Because they looked much fitter than Munster. Munster looked dead on their feet.
Well, that's because because you're right, their conditioning, Northampton's conditioning is ace, because they never kicked the ball out. They kept the ball in play, kept Munster moving.
They're explosive, they're strong. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, they're really very, very good at the moment.
Yeah. And their defence is so much better than last year.
Yeah. So on the defence, right, and I was going to pick up on this, and I can't really put my finger on what it is. Is it just good defence?
I don't know.
Or is it the fact that, you know, Munster, you think about Munster, and you think about a hard-working, gritty team who are, you know...
Well, and that first half, to be fair to Munster, that's exactly what they were.
Yeah. But then second half, they were missing tackles. They were doing things which are unacceptable by Munster standards, like slipping off tackles, not getting on their feet quick enough, not getting back in the game. That's where Northampton had so much joy. They broke from underneath their own sticks at one point.
Well, it was a set piece for that. The first Hendy try was a set piece inside their own 22, and they just went.
Mm. Yeah. Well, the one I'm thinking of, they got turned over, maybe on the opposition 10, something like that. But they went from underneath their own sticks in the second half. I thought that's remarkable. But it's also very un-Munster-like. And I wonder if that defence is a product of fitness rather than scheme. Because they just looked more enthusiastic. They didn't look better organised. It didn't look like it was a system thing. It just looked like an enthusiasm thing to me.
If you just repeatedly get into position the same position, but you're there half a second earlier,
yeah,
it makes a big difference. It changes the picture earlier. There's less space to attack in. And over a long period of time, that will compound.
Mm. Yes, and that's exactly what happened. I think Munster were very lucky not to have a giant score put on them.
They had a lot. They were
missing a lot of players. Not least Jean Klein, RG Snyman, and Adogbo, three massive locks that they didn't have. Nash and Daly in the back line. They were missing a lot of frontline players. Maybe
Freeman, Mitchell.
It was Furbank.
Furbank
and Pearson. Were the main ones for Northampton.
Pearson, yeah. Mitchell didn't start, and...
No, but he was on the bench.
The other centre, whose name escapes me, who's... Hutchinson.
Scottish guy, yeah, Hutchinson.
Yeah.
Whether he would have started or... No, Munster were absolutely missing significant personnel. There's no question.
Oh, absolutely.
Incomparable, the two. So I'm not saying Munster would have won with that. That's not my point. My point is that when you look at Munster's bench, it's no wonder that in the second half...
They faded.
They made the changes. I mean, actually, that change, Munster brought on Murray when Northampton brought on Mitchell, and you just look at the two there and you go, one's there to sort of tactically try and close out a game, one's there to just to drop the hammer, speed it up.
Yeah.
Play for it. I mean, they could have started Murray, and also I'm sure Murray still got a few tricks up his sleeve should he decide to do so.
Well, he would be very useful if Munster were leading.
Yeah.
He's not very useful if Munster have got to chase the game.
I don't know. I guess that is the prevailing orthodoxy, and you are broadly right. I just think it maybe might be underselling him somewhat. He's still quite the player.
Bearing in mind RG Snyman, I mean, I think he will probably be available for the URC running. I think he was just ill. I think it was quite a few players that had a...
Has he been playing much this year? So I've not really been paying attention.
No, he's not really been playing very much.
That does shock me.
He's been injured a lot. Do you know, today was going to be the first time in Munster colours that him and Tadhg Byrne started together.
That's remarkable.
And he has never started a game at Thomen Park.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow. Is he basically Tom Croft for the Lions?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, yeah.
That's an amazing start.
So, 13 games in 4 years.
It's unbelievable. Imagine that. Like, what's his wage? Like $500,000 a year? £2 million, 13 games.
If I had a temperature or whatever's wrong with him today, I'd be so ashamed to tell anyone. I would just play.
Craig Casey did play ill and vomited on the pitch.
Good lad.
I bet Leinster get a few more games out of him. I bet Nienaber knows how to push his buttons.
Yeah. So that is, if we assume he's on $500,000, which I think is what he's getting at Leinster next year. So let's say $500,000, 13 games.
I'd even take Sir Khaleesi.
£153,846 per match.
Per game.
Jeez. Oh,
ouch. Talk about Khaleesi being overpaid.
That is Lewis Rees Summit money.
Some of these players are just so intoxicating. So if you watched Snyman during the World Cup, you know what a class act he is. When he is fit and firing, he's amazing.
And there are so few players of his size.
Yeah.
Because he is enormous, over 130 kg, 6'9".
He offloads. He breaks the game. He does all these great things
in the world of that size.
But then, do you know who he reminds me of?
Manu Tuilagi.
Correct. Like, people are just intoxicated by what he could be, not by what he actually delivers week in, week out.
Yeah.
That's why he needs to get rid of him. And I'm glad that they have. They deserve better.
Moved him on to Leinster.
He's going to Leinster. Well, he's sticking around, apparently, because... Well, I mean, it makes total sense. I think the only reason he's going to Leinster is because he wants to stay in Ireland. Because, obviously, Munster have gone, we're not going to spend more money.
Yeah. You can have a quarter of what you're on at the moment.
I think we'll keep Jean Klein, thanks.
Yeah, exactly.
Good luck. But he's staying so he can get a passport.
Why would he want one of those? Just for any...
I mean...
European Union passport?
Yeah. European passport. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, I guess. So just
another year's work.
Yeah, get a passport. It's worth something, I guess.
Yeah. Mm. I thought Northampton, they're just ace. They're proper. But will the rubber meet the road next week?
Yeah, it's a good test for them, that, because... Bulls obviously are physical,
yeah.
But they've also got ace outside backs. Like, they are so fast, so dynamic. And Leon knew it today with Papier and Creel and
Arantxa and Moody.
Oh, good lord!
Yeah, they've got some awesome players.
Yeah,
and Vili Leroux and Johan Gutsen pulling the strings. They've got a few options there, but they probably... I don't... No, because I don't watch the Bulls very much. This week wasn't a good test. I don't know if they would be as physical as, say, a La Rochelle. Or Toulouse, specifically La Rochelle or Toulouse. They'd probably be close, but maybe not quite. So it's maybe just about the best matchup for Northampton.
Like, yeah, there is physical. Like, you know, Weenie Antonio is physical. Will Skelton is physical. But then South Africans don't necessarily... They're not necessarily physical in that way. They're physical and violent. And it's the violence. It's like the sheer terror of a... I'm just trying to think of an example.
You always go for Quagga Smith.
Quagga Smith, perfect example. Just the sheer violence of running into that line is horrific. So they'll bring physicality, but it'll just be a different form. It'll be a more dynamic, explosive, violent physicality, I would imagine.
And that's the bit that I don't know. So, like, the guys that you know... The guy that you know in the pack from this week for the Bulls would be Marcel Kurtzier,
mm-hmm.
who had that 4 or 5 years ago. Does he have it now? And I don't know the rest of the team, I'll tell you what, two
guys to watch, because the South African number 8 jersey is very much up for grabs. Evan Roos is in the mix, number 8 for the Stormers. It could be Jasper Visa still. But the two other guys that are very much in the mix both play for the Bulls. One of them played this weekend, one didn't, but hopefully will be available next weekend. Elrig Lowe and Cameron Hanekom, who is actually Wales qualified.
Is he really?
Really?
But they're both guys in the very early 20s, both big, strong boys.
Mm. Yeah, Evan Roos looks like a generational type of athlete.
Yeah, he hasn't pushed on. So no. You know how we always talk about, and well, you guys particularly have mentioned before.
Pierce Peace.
No. Just the judging people on potential rather than reality.
Yeah.
And I think Evan Roos is one of those. You saw him at 21 and thought, oh my God, imagine what he's going to be like when he's 24. Well, he's 24 now and he isn't as good as we were hoping he would be by this stage. But I think he could be.
Another guy who fits that mould, I think, is the 8 who came on for Racing today. Who's going to be the future of French rugby?
Jordan Joseph.
Yes.
Jonathan Joseph?
Jordan Joseph.
Yeah, not Jonathan Joseph.
Incredibly I mean, I was Jordan watching him today, I thought, Christ, he hits the line hard. He is a strong boy, but he isn't the future of French rugby.
Yeah, I was kind of looking at him, because when he was 18 playing for the under-20s, he was like 2 years younger than the rest of them, and he looked incredible. Today I was just thinking, has he had the right condition? Has he?
Yeah, is he exactly where he should be?
Yeah, because I meant to look him up, actually.
And Demba Bamba was ripping up trees like a few years ago. That's another French age group product who was immense. And now he is still... fairly good, I imagine. But again, not the future of French rugby.
Yeah, Jordan Joseph is now 23. So 5 years on from when he was playing for France under 20s.
Oh, he was starting today rather than on the bench, but yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, even worse then. Because I assumed, because I didn't see him first half, I assumed that he came off the bench.
Yeah. I'll tell you who else, we are bouncing around the games. I'll tell you who else who hardly got a mention today in the 60 minutes that we managed to see. Arundel.
Yes, I actually noticed by the fact I didn't notice him he was playing.
And Tom May and me very much on the same wavelength, because Tom May, Nick Mullins at one point just said, Tom, Henry Arundel, you know, what does he need to do? And he basically just went, he just needs to get go and get game, involved more. He just needs to get himself in the game.
Yeah.
But the contrast between the Toulouse wingers, who were getting in the game frequently.
Lebel was all over the shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll tell you what,
Sorry, go on.
I was going to mention the Northampton wingers.
I was going to mention two other wingers who I believe topped the charts this week for defenders.
Emmanuel Feyenoord-Wobosu will be one.
Yeah, he was ace.
Who was involved in... I mean, he is not shy for looking for work.
He's not, is he?
He was everywhere. And the other one, my boy, my beloved Bordeaux.
Well, both of them.
Both of them, but Pernod was just...
What a player.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
So Pernod, I think that...
Just on Arundel, what he needs to do is go on the international player pathway for the NFL next year.
Do you know, it might not be the worst solution for him. Be a good athlete somewhere else where you don't have to actually use your head or initiative.
He should be watching game tape of Pernod, just saying, like, how do you get yourself in that position doing exactly what Pernod... Because he's got the physical attributes to be able to do it.
Do you know who we should watch? Is Slighthome.
Slighthome's not a bad shout.
Like, because he is a compact, explosive guy.
Yep.
I don't think he has the skills of Pernod. Pernod and... what's his name? Northampton winger. The other Northampton winger.
Freeman
strikes me as English Pernod now. I think they're so similar in so many ways.
I mean, Pernod's the best winger in the world at the minute.
Him,
Colby Arendse.
Yeah, but of that style of winger, I mean, I'd say he's unique, as in he's uniquely good at that style. I think Freeman is similar. He's not as good yet. But he just picks the ball up from stationary. He runs sideways. He's big. He's strong.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Various skills. He offloads a lot. Freeman, just like Pernod, can start attacking moves. Like, there is a lot of similarities between those boys, aside from just their stature. The one thing I was going to mention about the wingers this week... The beer beret standing up of Elliot Daly was like a passing of the torch.
Yeah.
That was embarrassing.
He's so fast, though.
He's so good.
So if we're mentioning, like, Arundel's pretty chunky, Feyenoord-Wobosu is pretty chunky, Freeman is a big boy, beer beret is not a particularly...
Very slight.
Yeah. But he's so fast. His feet are so good.
Yeah, it was glorious. I can't believe that was... I mean, the forward pass was so marginal in that move.
Four tries chalked off in a row.
Yeah.
Unreal.
They were scoring for fun.
Yeah.
They were scoring for fun against a very, very well organised, very drilled Saracens defence.
Yeah.
With internationals in.
I thought it would be closer. I looked at the Saracens team. I thought, no Farrell, they're not going to win. But you still look at the Saracens team. And actually, there's still a lot of talent in that Saracens team. But I'll tell you what it was. It was when you were watching the game and you went, the two guys wearing three. Christian Judge and Ben Tamifuna. Yeah.
Well, they're both limited in different ways.
So here's a question for you. Who is heavier, Feyenoord-Wobosu or Arundel?
I'm going to say, because you've asked it, Feyenoord-Wobosu.
Because you've asked it, I'm going to say Arundel, who does have massive quads. If I would have guessed Arundel, I'd go is 92 kgs and Feyenoord-Wobosu 89.
I think Feyenoord-Wobosu is going to be closer to like 100, you know. He's chunky and he's dense, Feyenoord-Wobosu. He's chunky and dense.
I think he's 16 stone.
I think he's closer to 100. He's 90 something, but like 96.
I was surprised to learn a while ago that Arundel was nearly 100 kg.
Wow.
So he's 6 foot on the nose. So he's not especially tall, but he's got big rump, big thighs. So his England profile, which would be from the World Cup, is 98 kg.
Wow. That's big.
Yeah, for 6 foot. Faye were both so a centimetre shorter, so 5'11". He's listed on his Exeter profile.
I bet on Tinder he's 6 foot. Anyway, go on.
Exeter have him at 89, but England, which will be more up to date, have him at 94 kg.
Okay,
but it's like Arundel's
both big.
Well, Arundel's half a stone heavier. But then Freeman would be more like he's over 100.
Got 105. So
yeah, big something point. Like that.
Yeah, actually, talk about things that Arundel can learn from. Ferrer Bosa would be a great example of someone who's just phenomenally talented and who's looking for work. There's not really much finesse in what he does.
He's picked up so much work. Talking about passing the torch, he has picked up the Jack Knoll.
King of the pick and goes.
Yeah, he has actually.
He does the same job for them.
He does a hell of a job.
So we got as far as briefly talking about a game. Which game did we talk about?
Well, let's talk about Exeter Bath. Yeah, we touched on lots of games. Let's get into Exeter v Bath, because that was an absolute belter.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if this game goes exactly the same way had Bath not lost Finn Russell early doors.
I think that's fair. And Redpath.
Yeah.
Because then Spencer goes out. Bailey moved to the 12 because they only had two backs on the bench.
Yeah. But I think actually it was Exeter's pack that won this. I thought that Exeter just looked, they just looked a little bit more rugged going forward. They looked a little bit more enthusiastic on the game line. But I also thought in that game, particularly in the first half, neither team was getting a foothold, and you were just waiting for one team to come alive. So you'd have like three or four phases of play. And then a knock on. Three or four phases of play. Then,
but if there was a win going end to end, and you've played in games before, you would say in team talks, right? This is a 10-15 point win. When we got it, let's make it count. Or when we're against it, or half time we're down. Don't worry about it. We're against the win.
Yeah.
And Bath went in 12-7 up, having played into that howling gale.
Yes, and that's where if you have Finn Russell on the pitch with that win behind him,
yeah,
Bath win that game. Because the pack become less important.
Yeah, I tend to think. It's hard to know, isn't it? It's hard to know.
What was incredible was that Exeter had loads of possession in the first half when they didn't have the option to really kick. But against the wind, they still kept their possession stats so high.
Yeah, I know it's really cliche, and I'm sure we've spoken about it lots before. But I just love the contrast between these two teams. So if you look at how the Bath squad is built and where the money is spent and how it's spent, it is superstars, some massive names, Spencer, Russell, yada, 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 yada. And then you look at what they've built Exeter. Everyone who is turning into a special player outside of Henry Slade is effectively a nobody.
Well Exeter Chiefs are, I believe, over £2 million under the cap.
Yeah, I've heard this.
2.2. What I've heard is 2.2 million under the salary cap.
Yeah.
Well, because.
And Bath are maxed out.
Yeah, Bath will definitely be maxed out. That's such a big difference. But that is really interesting to hear.
That's like a third.
Because it's a massive.
Well, it's nearly half of the salary cap.
It's 40%.
It's nearly. Two, yeah. It's 40%. Yeah.
Well, it just means
ignoring the credits and stuff. Well, they trust those guys because Baxter knows he wants to keep them. And he's going to have to give all of them pay rises. Effectively, everyone's due a 40% pay rise.
This exciting part about that team is they can keep him together.
Yeah.
If Bath find an exciting youngster, they've got to let somebody go to keep him. So an example of this, well, actually, not even, that's not the only example. An example of Bath struggling would be, does Charlie Yules stay next year? Now, I would obviously get rid of Charlie Yules, but he won't because there's not going to be enough money in the cap in order to, you know, pay him a re-raise for what a club captain is allegedly worth. So Exeter can keep all of these lads for the long term. Any they don't like, they can get rid of. And they have demonstrated to the whole world they know how to find players, which is terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying to think they can get rid of a whole European Champion Cup team, which is what they've done, and just build something from scratch.
The other thing, when there are good, talented young players around, Rob Baxter's got a story he can tell them, and if Rob Baxter sits you down and says, "We've done our due diligence. I know you're the right character for us," and look at Emmanuel Faye-Wiboso, Davis Jenkins, Chris Chunza,
it's incredible,
and the list goes on. You can be the next one of those. And, yeah, it's massive.
Most point, not only would he play for England, look where you could go afterwards. Even our bad players are getting paid loads of money in France.
And the we talked about the... sorry, I didn't mean to...
No.
Make sure you remember what you're saying.
Yeah.
We talked last week, JB, when you and I were chatting on... Was it on the Patreon pod or whenever? I'd like ditch the academy system. Exeter University. Again... they're in the final, actually, next week. But they finished top of the box thing and they're in the cup, but... it's just all these players that we've just mentioned have all been playing for Exeter University.
Here's an interesting challenge, right? Is there a more highly paid team than the Exeter Chiefs European Cup winning team today? So what I mean by that, you get everyone,
Sam Simmons' salary now, Joe Simmons,
Hill, I mean
Jack Knoll,
Harry Williams, I mean, there was some guys,
Luke Cowan-Dickie,
yeah. I mean, Luke Cowan-Dickie
had to have
a pay cut because, of course, he's...
Sam Skinner, yeah. Johnny Gray.
Montpellier problems.
Johnny Gray's still there, isn't he?
He is.
But Nick White.
Johnny Gray will still be on a good screw, even though he's not playing.
Like, if you had Tom O'Flaherty.
If you had all of those salaries together...
Stuart Hogg,
yeah, if only he was still playing.
Well, I bet his TNT Sport and other reimbursements are okay.
If you put them all together, I bet you've got a seriously high-paid squad. A seriously high-paid squad on their current numbers.
Yeah.
Some lads just don't play anymore. I think Witten might be one. The
diminutive Ian Witten.
Yeah. Mm. But that's the story that Rob Baxter can tell these new recruits. It's, look, you can come, you can win stuff with us, you can be an Exeter legend, you might even make the England team. And when we're done with you, you can go and play in France. And here is a list of players and what they earn now because of me. Do you want to sign up or not?
I'd sign up. I'd play for Rob Baxter.
I'd play for him too, 100%. Or do you want to go to Bath?
The point I was going to make about Exeter and the shrewd business that they're doing... And it's really kind of piggybacking on a point that JB has made, both in the positive for Leicester and in the negative for Bristol, which is it kind of scouring the globe for these players.
Mm.
Like, some of them are local lads, some of them come from Wales, some of them come from South Africa via Italy or New Zealand via Ospreys, or basically all over the globe. He's looking for the kind of combination of highest potential plus best value, plus fit in with the culture.
Yeah.
And he, like, clearly considering many, many options in order to build that team. That's how good Baxter is.
It's so good. I hope he never takes the England job. Because if he did take the England job, I think most of his talents would be wasted. I just don't think it's the right job for him.
With the right level of control, and basically I mean... you need a new CEO for England. I mean, you need that regardless of whether Baxter's going to take. But with the right level of control for Baxter to be involved kind of from the ground up, from the under-16s, under-18s,
I might
under-20s.
Put him in charge of all of English rugby.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure I'd want him as the head coach. I don't think I want him in the Steve Borthwick role.
He could. I genuinely think he could do both. He wouldn't be as hands-on with, the under-16s, I'd like to think someone like Baxter could get the right structure.
The Conor O'Shea job.
Yeah, but just kind of good at it.
He could do what Rassie Erasmus does at South Africa. He's got an all-encompassing total control.
He actually even gets then, involved I mean, in I think the women's.
What is the major competitive advantage of Rob Baxter? And it's a relative advantage over his peers that he can get young players and mould them into something for his club below the salary cap. And that just doesn't really apply to international rugby.
Well,
that is what he has had to do because that is the task that he has got in hand.
Mm.
But that doesn't mean he could only be used in that one.
And one of the things we say so many times about English rugby is there's so little to choose between that player. Quite often we end up having arguments like we've had for the last however many years. Marcus Smith, Owen Farrell or George Ford, it doesn't matter. It does not matter which one of those is playing. It's the person at the helm who gets the alchemy right between whatever team goes out there and sets them up properly. That is the reason they win or lose, not because Marcus Smith wasn't playing and Owen Farrell was. It doesn't actually matter.
Well, it's the other Smith that's the boy now.
Well, he is.
Although we not spoke about the Quinn's Glasgow game.
Just before we move on, who do Exeter have next?
Toulouse away.
Toulouse.
Good luck.
Yeah.
So well, that's Toulouse, the end of that then.
Well, they did beat them there.
In 2020.
Yeah.
They beat them in the semi-final. Yeah. And beat them well in the semi-final. So
before that, and then immediately after they won that tournament, they changed, because that Toulouse game was one where Exeter's pick and go near the line just killed Toulouse. They did not have an answer to it. Change the rules. Can't do that anymore.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Talk to our mates up high. But they went back to that this week. They had 21 phases of pick and goes. Mm. It was slightly different pick and goes, but they were pick and goes.
And it did feel like there was a sense of inevitability about it, because Bath were leading, weren't they? They were 15-7 up.
Yeah.
Mm. And it just always felt that Exeter are going to do this. They're coming for you, and they're going to grind it out.
Yeah.
I'd love Exeter to go and do something in Toulouse. I just can't see it.
No,
I don't. I think it might be a big... It's just far too much to ask.
It really is. You know, it's next weekend as well.
They went to Toulon and won.
Yeah.
But this is another level.
So Toulon's a bunch of clowns.
Yeah. Is nothing compared to this Toulouse team. Yeah. Nothing at all. A good look, Exeter.
Harlequins, did anyone see that?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't, so tell me about it.
Marcus Smith is good at rugby.
Is he?
Yeah. It was an interesting game. So Glasgow scored first, and then Quins had a load of pressure and made it count. So went in at halftime, 21-7 up, and you think... It was the Murley would try, it was just before half time, wasn't it? Because of the sin bin. So you think, right, Quins are going to kick on 21-7. They scored the last three tries. They had loads of possession and territory. They're going to win this. Glasgow came back into it second half and scored two tries in 2 minutes. Ex Sedgley Park hooker, Johnny Matthews, crashed over. Current top try scorer in the URC, crashed over for a try. And George Horn scored a wonderful try a couple of minutes later. And you just had this feeling after last weekend where Quinn's hammering Bath and then just kind of switched off and almost imploded. They did actually implode because Glasgow were winning until 4 minutes to go with one of the last plays of the game. Quinn's turned down a kickable 3 points that would have drawn them level.
Yeah.
And went for the corner and scored a pushover try.
Crikey.
To win it. So it was a good game. Quins, had they played like they had in the first half of the whole game, should have won by 30 points.
Very Quinsy, that.
Yeah, but they didn't. They let Glasgow back into it with two good tries and just had enough at the end.
Yeah, interesting that. So I didn't see the game, but my take on Quins is obviously they can be horrendous if they see someone like Saracens, but them and Northampton... Maybe they have an even better chance than Northampton to progress.
Away at Bordeaux.
Because I don't think... So, I think Quins and their identity and what they do can literally score points against anyone. And even Bordeaux, I mean, I think they can go toe-to-toe scoring points with literally anyone. Now, I'm not saying they're going to be successful, but they will get points, and that's important. And if you're getting points against another team, sometimes that does mean that they put a foot wrong. And Harlequins don't mind conceding points. It doesn't seem to mentally affect them. It's not like, oh, well, we've conceded some points, let's give up. It's like, well, we'll just score more. So that's why I think they've got a real fighter's chance, no matter where they go.
So Saracens put 50 points on Harlequins.
Uh-oh.
Bordeaux.
What does Dean Ryan have to say about this?
Bordeaux, this time around, only put 45 points on Saracens, but had they have scored half of their disallowed tries, it would have been nearer 60.
Crikey.
So I completely agree. Quins can score tries with the best of them. I just don't think they get anywhere near Bordeaux.
If Dean Ryan don't. Listened to our podcast, right, and constantly got heard references like, what would Dean Ryan think about this? do you think he would remember saying what he said about Oyuna?
No chance.
No.
Absolutely not.
So, and also,
7 years on.
What I would say as well.
And the rest probably is about 2014.
So,
a weekly mention for Dean Ryan from one interview 7 years ago.
Quins were very Quinsy, as in having amazing patches and then just dropping
switching off. Yeah.
Glasgow were very much like the Scotland team, as in they're asleep and then they're devastating.
Yeah. And they really were. Those two tries were mega.
They were. Bordeaux, just looking at their results and away from home, anyone's got a shot against Bordeaux, they are not great. They got beaten by Lyon last game in the top 14.
Lyon are pretty good.
Away. Well, they're down near the bottom.
Third from bottom.
Yeah.
And they got beaten comfortably, 27-10. But at home, Bordeaux are just... Well, they beat Toulouse at home. They're a different beast.
Yeah.
There. And that crowd is a proper crowd.
Yeah. The crowd is amazing.
Yeah. They've got some amazing players.
Yeah, the walkout for the Saracens Bordeaux game, it did feel a bit special.
Yeah, they got smashed by Castres away, but yeah, they just they're a proper team.
I'm not sure there's much to say about Bordeaux Saracens because Saracens were not very good. But the Saracens team actually on paper, you'd hope, wouldn't you, that when you have superstars like Ben Earl and Jamie George and Mario Itoje, they would do better than that.
But it's a little bit like the Toulouse Racing game in that Bordeaux have got just, you can't contain them for 80 minutes. And they're gonna, the floodgates will open at some point. And Saracens actually did quite well to stop the dam from bursting for as long as they did.
But that was at least in part due to so many disallowed tries.
It was 10-0 half time.
The bit that was, like, I'm just looking down the one stat I always like is defenders beaten. The most defenders beaten in the Saracens team. So the back line reads, this is defenders beaten, 1-0-0-0-2-0-0. So that's defenders beaten by Saracens. The Bordeaux team reads 6-11-0-3-2-1-3.
11 Pernod.
Pernod, yeah. So the most defenders beaten in the whole Saracens team was Theo Dan, who came off the bench and beat 3 players.
It's poor, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's...
They just, so it kind of tells a story of the blunt edge of Saracens, which was blunted by a superb defensive performance by Bordeaux.
Saracens have it doesn't take a genius to tell you Saracens have gone backwards from last year.
Yeah.
But the rate of knots have gone backwards is quite impressive.
But it's also not surprising when you look at the personnel they've lost.
No, so they're going to have to rebuild that. They're probably suffering a little bit because they did extra long deals with their golden generation who are coming to an end.
Yeah.
And they've got to change the way that they play. I don't think they've got the options to play in multiple ways like they used to. They've basically got one option now, which is how they played against Harlequins, which is all-out attack.
Which doesn't work against much bigger, well-organised.
Nothing happened.
The game next weekend, oh my God, I'm so excited about Leinster-La Rochelle. It's so spicy.
Did you watch the La Rochelle game, Tim?
Yeah.
I was double screening,
but I mostly watched Stormers-La Rochelle.
Because you said an interesting thing on our group, this one I asked, because you said an interesting thing on our group about Will Skelton.
Will Skelton looks like pre-Saracens Will Skelton.
That's not good.
He looks like he's carrying a bit more timber around the middle. He looks north of 150.
I mean, he still had some lovely moments and lovely offloads.
And actually, he did one lovely thing. So Salman Morat had a massive head collision with Dion.
Was it Skelton's knee?
Skelton had a knack of just some grubby little just diving on players on the floor unnecessarily, all 150 kegs of him just lying on top of a player, not letting him up. Anyway, there was a massive head collision. Oh, it was Hakjiva Deimani went off, and Morat they clashed heads, and Morat was lying on the floor out of it, and the play came back towards him, and Will Skelton just covered him so that no one could touch him. It was quite a nice little moment.
That was good.
But so he used all of his however many kilos it is to good effect there.
150-ish now, maybe.
But do you remember how good he was when he went to Saracens? How, like, he was just rejuvenated as a player.
He lost about 20 kg.
Yeah, and I'm not saying he's not good, but he looks like he's carrying some extra timber that might not be as effective.
I've seen the highlights. I didn't watch the game. What was the game that was on at that time?
It was Bath Exeter.
That was Bath Exeter. Yeah.
Bath Exeter.
So I was watching that. I can't help but feel disappointed because Stormers are obviously a great team, but they're going up against the double reigning European champions in La Rochelle. And I always like the underdog to win if I've not got a dog in the fight.
Yeah, there's something about La Rochelle though. You got to hand it to him. What was it in the Champions Cup final? In the Champions Cup final, they were 17-0 down.
Yeah.
And in this game, they were 16-0 down.
Yeah.
That's some minerals. And Gregory Aldrit is just awesome.
Yeah. And then the end is hard to take.
Yeah.
For Libok, who admittedly it was a touchline conversion.
With that wind.
With the wind and on the wrong side for him, for a right-footed kicker. But it's gutted.
Big, kick well a kick on the wrong side didn't stop Henry Slade from banana in one over, did it?
But, it didn't. Yeah. That was a little bit closer, but yeah you are right.
So,
and you kick well apart from that.
And can I just change the subject completely before we go to...
Yeah, you were just looking at your phone or something, what?
To a different game.
Yeah, go on.
My wife has just sent me the terms and conditions to apply to Gladiators. I'm definitely going to fill this in, because I've not been at all impressed by the competitors this year.
I've not actually watched... I tried to get the kids into it and they weren't interested, so I've not watched it yet.
You going to apply, Phil? I haven't watched it at all. What's in there that I would remember from the first one, right? Is there still a Travelator?
Well, I mean, there's still basically the Gauntlet. So
what's the Gauntlet?
When you just run through people. I'm pretty sure I'll be fine with that.
Oh, is that where they're holding, like...
Yeah, they've basically got some soft sticks.
Tackle pads. Yeah. Tackle pads and stuff.
Yeah, not a problem. Because, like, you know, you've got these 70-kilogram ultramarathon guys running through it, and they usually do all right, so I'm pretty happy with that one. There's another one where you just run across... This is the one I don't get, right? They have these baskets, and you've got to put the balls into the baskets, and then the Gladiators have got a basic rugby tackle, I guess, but they don't rugby tackle much. And also, they always go for the nearest basket. You want to go for the far basket so you can use some footwork. I don't understand that one bit. The climbing wall, I have got no chance on. I've got more chance of pulling the wall down than actually getting up the wall. There's just no way I'm getting up.
Sort of thing you could learn.
They still do the rings.
Hang tough is not, it's not going to go well.
No, that's for someone smaller.
Yeah, hang tough. But mind you, the Gladiators are massive, to be fair.
Mm. Yeah, they're most...
Is Alex Gray good?
Who's Alex Gray?
The rugby player.
Rugby player.
Is Alex Gray on there?
Yeah.
Did not know that.
What's it? Adonis?
Oh, wow. He's tight end for... Well,
Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, tried to be tight end for Atlanta Falcons. No idea.
Former Bath. Newcastle.
Yeah, he played
London Irish.
Flying for Bath. I'm sure he played...
He played wing for Bath as well.
Yes, he did. Sevens it was.
Sevens, yeah.
I'm sure... I do reasonable in some of the events and then terrible at others.
Apply. Go on. Yeah, apply.
Yeah, like you in CrossFit, not? Isn't it?
Pretty much, yeah. Zero cardio. Zero body weight ability.
You're kind of like a weak power lifter and a fat CrossFitter.
Yeah, exactly. A weak power... Yeah. Perfect. A guy came to our gym the other day, right?
Go on.
He comes on Wednesdays. He can casually snatch 140 kilograms.
Really?
Yeah.
That's just... How big is he?
Big lad. I think he might even be... Not massively tall, but I think he might be British weightlift.
I was going to say, weightlifter. I bet his technique is just perfect.
Unreal. Yeah, I've not seen him lift yet, so...
You'll give him a few tips.
Yeah. No, actually.
You'll hide in a locker.
140.
Peeping Tom... Getting very excited, looking at his lift.
Oh,
leave your camera set up.
Joe's brother is a Commonwealth weightlifter, or was looking to get into the Commonwealth Games. Have I told you this before? Rugby background, but not the rugby background you think. Charlie Morgan's brother is a Commonwealth weightlifter.
Really?
Yeah, trains down in Cardiff.
Wow, that's cool.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Nice.
Right, cool. Sorry. Continue with
No, the I was just thinking I did some public speaking coaching work with the with a British weightlifting champion.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
You want to say which one?
I won't, just in case they don't want me to, but
yeah, fair enough.
It was a women's world champ, women's British champion weightlifter.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. That's cool.
Well, the weightlifting World Cup's on at the moment, if you're interested in that.
I was going to say yeah, but no, actually.
It is good. It is
good. I like it at the Olympics.
I would always watch it. If it was on,
Olympics,
I would
yes.
watch it and get into it.
It has to feel like a big tournament. It's like golf. It's weirdly, I can watch when it feels massive. Just like a normal PGA.
Cup,
normal PGA match. Like, no, not interested. A normal ATP Tour tennis match. Who cares?
Davis Cup. No thanks.
Exactly. La Rochelle were good, but not great. And Leinster were good, not great.
Yeah, and
Was an interesting game.
It was an interesting game. There's a few interesting things. There was the...
I need to give Leinster a bit more credit for this performance, because Leicester Tigers are really getting quite good.
They didn't have Rafael Martin Chessum.
Yeah,
that is true. That is true. But they are still pretty good.
I felt they missed Rafael as well, because the breakdown was officiated pretty stringently. Like, Cracknell got penalised at least twice. Cracknell wearing number 7, playing open side, but he's not. He's certainly not a Rafael style centre.
He's not Rafael, but he can absolutely smash people.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He is a destroyer of worlds.
But that's not what you needed, because you had a ref who was really on top of the breakdown, and at least twice he got penalised for doing exactly what you've just described. Absolutely smashing someone, but going off his feet and not having the subtlety that someone like Rafael.
Yeah, there is no subtlety about Ollie Crackle.
Precisely. So they missed Rafael at the breakdown because of the way it was officiated.
Yeah, I think for a team that are as physical as Leicester, and they are turning into that, and they are, generally speaking, I mean, actually, they are very physical. Like, the centres are physical, the ball carriers are physical. Everything that they do, that's what they intend to hurt people. I thought Leinster handled it, kind of with ease, and that's impressive, because that's what Leicester Tigers do.
I think Leinster need to be better. I think they will be better. I'm not convinced by Ross Byrne. At 10.
Good and bad. So like the second Gibson Park try with Big Joe McCarthy coming
through.
Yeah, that
was class, wasn't it?
That was awesome. And that was a lovely pass by Byrne, and then a great supporting line. And to have, like, it was clearly pre-planned to have your kind of non-athletic of your big lock type characters running that line, which he ran beautifully. So that was ace. Other times, yeah, I think he's maybe not the answer, but they currently don't have another answer.
No, right. Unless
he's
they give
dreadful,
his brother,
though, is he?
Give his brother. The,
no, no. Anyway. He's very solid.
Prendergast is the guy long term.
Yeah.
So I heard it was Byrne the younger,
Harry Byrne.
Yeah, who's the long term answer?
He came off the bench.
So are you saying that it's neither of those two? Because I don't watch him enough to...
I think, long term, I think Prendergast is the one that they're thinking is going to be the boy.
Who was under 20s last year.
Yeah.
They'll find someone, surely. I mean, there's only two teams in Ireland. I mean, surely they'll find a fly half.
Hey, Ulster had a good win.
Great win. Where? In the which...
Away to Montpellier.
In which competition?
Yeah.
Yeah, who cares?
The other one. The bit that was...
Hang on. Is Billy Burns going to Munster?
Yeah.
They need a backup 10.
So who's going to take over at Leinster, Ulster?
Who knows?
To be decided.
Don't know.
Is there a foreign 10 in the URC? Sorry, in the Irish teams?
No.
No.
So to me, that sounds like you're going to be in the market for a South African or a New Zealander or something.
Or someone like Billy Burns, who's Irish qualified, potentially.
Well, you wouldn't need to, would you?
Well, not you wouldn't necessarily need to.
So you've basically got the whole market available to. Maybe that's the plan.
Paddy Jackson coming back.
Paddy Jackson.
That's one that would not happen.
No,
anyone but Paddy Jackson,
pretty much. Just back to this game, I thought so. Leinster scored the first try, then Leinster got those three. Back-to-back-to-back Gibson Park tries. Leinster turned down a couple of kickable points and went for the corner and fluffed their lines. But then they came back into it with the Cronin try in the second half. And you thought, at that point, it was like
22-15.
Yeah. And you thought, Leinster going for it. They're attacking. Was it Dan Kelly?
Yeah, they had...
Who throws the wide pass.
Well, yeah, because at that point, just before the Cronin try, so at this point, Leinster were down a man with James Lowe, and the space was on James Lowe's wing. It was as far as I could tell, it was a 3-on-2.
Yeah,
and Dan Kelly opted to go for the wang it pass wide, and Henshaw.
Yeah, he tried a miss three instead of a draw and pass. Henshaw intercepts. It's then a more than two
14.
It's a two score game. It went to 29
29-15.
Did Hassel Collins have some sort of nightmare at some point?
That rings a bell.
He had a nice opportunity in the first half where he grubber kicked through, and if it hadn't have hit, it was probably Keenan covering, it would have been a wonder try. Late on, I can't remember.
Well, disappointing. Disappointing because I think Leicester are one of the better teams in England. And, well, I think if you look at the matches, the number one determinant, with the exception of La Rochelle, home advantage. But I would have liked to have seen Leicester push on.
Yeah, had Leicester have had Rafael Chesson Martin, it certainly wouldn't have harmed their cause.
No, more big men, big good men.
I don't think they would have won.
No, I don't think they would have won. Leinster will need to be better. La Rochelle will need to be better. But the thing is, whoever does come through that has a semi-final against Northampton or the Bulls on home country advantage. So I kind of think this is... No, it's not as simple as to say it's a spot for the final, but it's not far off it.
Yeah, Northampton do not match up well against either Leinster or La Rochelle.
Not Leinster. I think La Rochelle is not too tough. It is. It's massively tough. But it's the better of the two.
For Northampton.
Yeah, but they've got to get through who first?
Bulls. Northampton.
Bulls at home.
But home.
It's big boy rugby now. If they're going to be any good, they've got to win. Yeah.
Northampton. I think Northampton can win that. I just can't see them beating either Leinster or La Rochelle.
Leinster in the Aviva or La Rochelle somewhere in France.
No. That's a completely different prospect. Yeah. No. You're right.
Whereas on the other side, it's looking like it could work. It's looking set up to be Toulouse v Bordeaux, which is dynamite.
It's
what a semi-final.
It's almost certain to be.
Wasn't that the semi-final a couple of years ago? And it went down to... That was the semi-final a couple of years ago.
Was it?
It's before I started supporting Bordeaux.
I'm sure
I think
it
you're
was.
Probably right.
I can't remember. Anyway, doesn't matter. I'm sure Bordeaux got to a semi.
So who did La Rochelle beat first?
I kept to a semi watching Bordeaux.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it doesn't ring a bell, unfortunately.
Okay.
Maybe you're right. Yeah, it does feel like that side of the draw is the side which is going to produce the champion. The Bordeaux Toulouse side.
It might be. I'm just looking. 2021, Toulouse got to the final. And who did they play in there?
2022, they lost to La Rochelle in the round of 16.
Toulouse Bordeaux, 2021.
There you go, Tim.
There you go.
It was. And it the semi-finals that year were Toulouse Bordeaux and this year's quarter-final, La Rochelle Leinster. So, and the other teams in it then.
That final was awesome.
Tell me that was where
Toulouse La Rochelle final, wasn't it?
Toulouse won it.
Where 22-17.
They've got the fifth star, the ski mask final, yeah. Champagne and ski masks.
So here you go. Tell me the other four teams in the quarterfinals. So we know Toulouse, we know Bordeaux, we know La Rochelle and Leinster. Who are the other four teams?
Say again.
So the other four teams in the 2021 quarterfinals.
Oh my word, I have no idea.
2021 quarterfinals.
Yeah.
So we've already got Bordeaux. So Leinster, La Rochelle, Bordeaux and Toulouse.
Correct.
The other four, I will go...
I'll give you a clue.
Well, it's not Harlequins.
We've already spoke about the final the year before.
Oh, Exeter.
Exeter were one of them. Yeah. Exeter travelled... did they host Leinster?
Munster must have been in the mix somewhere.
Munster got knocked out by Toulouse in the round of 16.
Saracens got battered by somebody.
Saracens weren't in the competition that year.
Oh.
Because they'd been relegated.
Right.
Okay. Did Ulster get there?
Ulster did not.
No.
Sale Sharks lost to La Rochelle.
Sale.
Yeah. Do you remember?
Yeah.
They weren't emotional enough. Had nothing to do.
Is that the game was it an unemotional Sale that year?
It was in the quarterfinals in La Rochelle. Had 45 points on them.
Isn't it amazing? If only they were just less tearful or more tearful. I mean, I don't know which one it is. They would have won that game.
Racing?
So Bordeaux beat Racing 24-21. And the final one, they're not. I don't think they even qualified for the Champions Cup this year.
Connacht?
They are no French team who are
okay.
Who were good a few years ago? Were good 10 years ago, but have gone off the boil.
Clermont,
Toulon,
Clermont. Yeah,
they have gone off the boil.
Well, who owns Clermont? That'd be a good investment, though. Massive fan base, huge history, new TV deal about to be signed.
Do you know? So Arthur Ituria, who this is something I learnt while I was out in France as well. Arthur Ituria, who was at Clermont for years.
And he's now at your beloved Bayonne.
He's now at my beloved Bayonne.
You had a thing for him for a while, didn't you?
Yeah, he's very good.
Very good player. Mm. He got off. He is on a contract at Bayonne that is half what he was offered at Pau.
Really?
And the reason is because in top 14 terms, Pau is the nearest rival for Bayonne. And he outright... This is one thing that when I you'll see this at some point, but in the little thing that's bubbling away in the background, but this is a spoiler. Nick Abendanen revealed this, a new coach at Bayonne, and he was just talking about the rivalry in English clubs because he was a Bath player, the Gloucester rivalry, the Bristol Bath, all the rest of it. He said this would never ever happen in England, but one of their players turned down a contract worth double what he's currently being paid because he will not play for Pau.
But
so his family would not accept him playing for Pau.
Is Arthur Ituria not a Clermont lad?
No, he's a Basque lad.
He was born in Bayonne.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure he captained Clermont for a little while.
Yeah, probably did, but Bayonne haven't been a good team. One of the things Bayonne have been trying to do is get all the Basque players back.
Interesting.
Back. He refused a massive deal because he was like, I'm not playing for Pau. Not a chance.
Their rival is Pau. It's not Biarritz.
Well, no.
Is it kind of just like the
rivalry
Gloucester?
is Biarritz, but Biarritz are shit now. They're about to go out of business.
That's rubbish. Biarritz was such a cool team.
Such a cool team. Aaron Nordicke and.
Just the kit and how it looked. The whole thing.
Yeah, because it had the Basque flag colours, didn't it? Red, white, and green.
It's just one of the coolest teams.
Yeah,
certainly the early 2000s. Yeah. Just amazing.
Yeah. But yeah, that I don't know any other country in the world where that would happen.
Maybe in football.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like Ollie Barkley or Mike Tindall or anyone like that would.
Dave Atwood's played for them all.
Dave Atwood. Yeah, I mean, it's not like those guys exist.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. Anyway, well, I can't remember why that came up. Clermont. Oh, yeah.
Clermont.
Yeah, that was the other team.
That said, I know you say it wouldn't happen, but the French players are very transient. So
lots of them are incredibly transient.
Yeah, like Ficou, Toulouse, Stade. I mean, if he's got any Paris affiliation, he soon ditched that and went over to Racing. Dante's...
Oh, it's not saying the opposite does not exist.
Yeah.
But that example is something that, like, I think you're right in saying football, yes, rugby, no, except for in France.
Yeah.
I heard a stat. Is this Harlequin's first ever knockout win in the tournament?
In the top level, yeah, which that was mentioned.
That's amazing.
That was mentioned at least 10 times in comms.
Was it really?
You couldn't move for that being repeated.
Well, this is only the second year they've had a round of 16. Let's not forget.
Yeah, but still.
I mean, they're a big team. They've been playing in the competition for 25 years.
And they're English champions twice in recent times.
Yeah, it's fair.
I can't believe that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they would have had to have been one of the best eight to have been in a knockout game before last year.
Bloodgate was a knockout game, was it not?
Yeah, it was. And Nick Evans missed the drop goal that they brought him on to take.
Oh, crikey.
Because I heard that stat and I was like, hold on, Bloodgate though. What about Bloodgate? But he's like, he missed.
Yeah.
It wasn't even worth it.
Exactly right. But it was worth it, wasn't it? When you think about it. Like, it's such a good story.
Do you think the doctor who was suspended for 2 years or whatever happened?
There's a physio that got screwed.
It's just like the post office thing. I mean, in the end, it was a good thing because it made a great TV show.
Look. I was telling a friend about this, that me and my friend growing up, a guy called Tom, we used to get up to all sorts of nonsense. And our mantra would be 16 to like 21, knocking around together. Our mantra would be, will our parents laugh about this by Christmas? And at that age, basically everything is a yes. Crash the car, laugh about it by Christmas. Do things, go to jail for the night, laugh about it by Christmas. Like nothing was off the table because they're all good stories. And I kind of think Bloodgate, because it's only sport, isn't it? I mean, except for the physio, which that was bad. It's just sport. Who actually cares? It's just a great story now. It's just a great drama.
There's a French saying, which I'm going to, I can't remember the exact phrasing of it, but it's something along the lines of, if you slip up and fall down the stairs, everyone laughs at you. If you tell people that you slipped up and fall down the stairs, everyone laughs with you.
Do you think more people speak about the winners of the Tour de France on a daily basis, or they talk about the cheating in the Tour de France on a daily basis? People love a scandal.
I do love Marco Pantani.
I don't even know who that is.
We know people love a scandal from the Q&A section of the Times travel pages.
Oh, yes, we do, don't we? Yes, we do. We'll talk about that in the Patreon pod, I guess.
Marco Pantani, the pirate, who in the 90s, he was a truly exceptional climber and was, I think doing both good and bad drugs. As in,
oh, really?
As in, performance enhancing and party enhancing drugs, and died way, way too young.
Are the two mutually exclusive? Like, actually, some anabolic steroids might help you really bust some moves.
Lance Armstrong drugs.
When you're raving.
I'm not sure the kind of party drugs would help him get up those.
Yeah.
Up
a bit of EPO would help you party for longer.
Yeah, it would. True. It's very, very true. So a bit of Lance Armstrong and a little bit of Will Greenwood.
Pantani, his early death was caused by acute cocaine.
Oh, he's dead?
Yeah. He died, so he was in his pomp in the late 90s and early 2000s. Died in 2004, so age 34, caused by acute cocaine poisoning. Just think how powerful and efficient his lungs were.
Well, if you want to know about the ultimate intersection between partying and illegal drug use and the fun you can have in a limited period of time, look up the category of dead wrestlers. Because they, I mean, talk about living hard and short and looking great for the most part. I mean, that's pretty much the optimum. We trade in 80 years of desperate sadness for 40 years of a wrestler. Yeah, why not?
Some of the Ric Flair stories from like the 80s are,
but also
unbelievable.
And he's still alive. That's unbelievable.
That is amazing.
He still lives.
Yeah. The other part of that wrestler story, which I always think gets left out in what you say, when you go, "What a life! What an amazing life!" is to look like they look.
Oh,
that must have taken hours. Like actually, to the point that, to an extent, they must have had no life.
Oh, I think they were taking so much gear that they just do a couple of push-ups every day and you'll be fine, and then go and party.
No, but that was the life, wasn't it? It was, you work out during the day, you get concussion a little bit in the evening, and then you go out and get hammered at night, and you get hammered. Like there's stories about Andre the Giant, who would get a crate of beer between towns and nail the crate of beer in the passenger side of the car. Now, I'm not saying that's a great example of how to live your life.
That's not what I consider a party anymore. Maybe when I was like 18, you'd think that would be fun. But he must have been doing that age 30.
I can only imagine the fun you would have as a wrestler.
Oh, some of the stories are
incredible.
Because
you're always travelling around in a big band. It's not like you... So do you remember the...
Sausage Fest, though.
Well, it is in the ring, but when you go to that local Oklahoma town, which you've just been performing at. So do you remember TNT wrestling?
Yeah.
Their sales point was that they had a base, like an actual place where the wrestlers went and they perform and people would come to that, which is unusual because in wrestling, they're basically a travelling circus. So you get all of like camaraderie and the conflict of being together all of the time. But then different towns, rich owner that bails you out, loads of drugs, loads of alcohol. I mean, it's a recipe for utter chaos and disaster. But what a bunch of stories.
There should be more books and films.
Oh. Some of the stuff that's come out in the last 12 months about Vince McMahon,
yeah.
There's been some bad stories.
Oh, I haven't seen these.
Bedtime
reading.
Search Vince McMahon, kind of recent news, last 6 months, last 12 months.
Just listen to any interview with any wrestler from the 90s, and you kind of get an indication.
I feel like reading the Vince McMahon stories is I'm going to be the equivalent of that meme where they have the different pictures of Vince McMahon getting more and more excited. Yeah.
You can't actually get a good biography of Vince McMahon. I've tried to buy one, and there's lots of unofficial ones. I want the
redacted. It's all redacted. It has to be redacted.
Yeah,
there's ongoing court cases on all of it.
I know. But
right,
incredible businessman too.
Come on.
So just to finish this, I'm on Marco Pantani's Wikipedia.
Oh yeah, of course.
So I need you to tell me his height and weight, and the description you've got to go off.
Who is he?
So Marco Pantani, he was said to have the classic build for a mountain climber.
Oh, okay.
So he's going to be light. He's going to be really lean.
Yeah, so...
So I'll go 68 kilograms and 6 foot two.
JB?
Oh, wow. Okay. So I think he's short. I think he is... I'd say short. I don't think he's 6 foot. I think
long levers, I would have thought, would
be
a
advantage. He's
5'10
and about 67 kilograms.
So he's... 5'7" and 57 kilograms.
What? He's a jockey.
57 kilograms is incredibly light.
A doctor that I know had to operate the other day, a doctor from CrossFit, I might add, on a 40-kilogram man.
Ooh.
Think about that.
You could dumbbell snatch that man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
40 kilogram.
That's... Many of the stories I get told by a specific doctor who's operating is on people, men and women, whose weights are closer to Weenie Antonio or Will Skelton's weight.
Yeah.
Back to your story about the Heaton Park today. Yeah. Anyway.
So Pantani is a climber who partied too hard. I've never heard of him.
Yeah, he's famous for... Because I used to watch the Tour de France with my old man in the... Kind of when I was a teenager.
Bloody hell, Phil. As in, like, a cycling climber.
A cycling climber, yeah.
Right.
Tour de France.
Not a climber.
Well, he was talking about the Tour de France cycling.
Yeah. And I was just like, how's he got from cycling to climbing?
Oh.
Yeah. why is this relevant?
Marco Pantani.
Right, okay, understood.
Yeah, and like...
The pirate.
And when you talk about Mark Cavendish being a sprinter, he's not...
He's
not the 100 metres.
Don't remember that guy in the Olympics.
Right, we're definitely done.
Yeah.
Enjoy the rugby next week. More content at patreon.com/eggchasers and at the boys' end.